on today's Run to the Top podcast.
One of the challenges for runners is understanding that training is not an equation. It is really a dance. You know, how do you feel today, and how does that inform how you might actually do the run that's scheduled, and how that might inform the next day's run and the next day's run?
Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast from Runners Connect, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. Together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now here's your host, Stephanie K. Atwood.
Welcome. This is Stephanie K. Atwood, Boston Marathon qualifier, coach, and host for the Run to the Top podcast. Greg McMillan and McMillan Running are names that are highly respected and have been part of the running world for many years. Following our two other interviews on the You Can Superstart story and the surprising benefits to runners, Greg will chime in on the subject of superstarts as part of a runner's toolbox. He will also share tips and tricks from his vast experience through McMillan Running with the thousands of runners who have benefited from his methodology. Before meeting Coach Greg, let's take a moment to thank our Run to the Top sponsors. Today's episode is sponsored by You Can, the superstarch energy bars and powders that provide long-lasting fuel before and during training runs and races with no sugar spikes and no crashes. Later in the episode, I'm going to outline what the research shows You can do for your fueling and tell you how you can save 20% on your order. Welcome back to Run to the Top podcast and today's guest, Greg McMillan. Greg McMillan owns the well-known and well-respected online training company called McMillan Running. Coach Greg blends his experience as a national champion runner with his background in exercise science to create scientifically based, proven training plans that are individualized to a runner's unique traits. Renowned by runners and coaches across the globe, he has one of the most diverse coaching resumes around, with equal success coaching new runners, age groupers, Boston qualifiers, and Olympians. Welcome, Greg.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's great to be talking with you today. I have known about you for many years, and I am looking forward to learning from you. So we'll start with our Run to the Top first four, and those are: what is your current age, where were you born, where are you currently living, and what is your favorite current race distance?
Excellent. Well, those are easy ones. I think I can get those. I am now 50 years old. I was born in Tennessee. I now live in California, and my favorite race distance is the 5K.
All right. Good start. Okay. So, Greg, tell us a bit about yourself. How long have you been running, and what got you started?
Well, I grew up in rural Tennessee on a farm, so I ran a lot when I was very, very young and was successful in sort of the elementary school and middle school competitions that occurred every now and then. And then, of course, the high school coach just watched those young runners and picked them out when they got to high school. And so He contacted me about running in high school, actually, when I was a little bit younger. And really fell in love with the sport in high school and ended up being state champion and then running in college. And then a little bit after that, trying to kind of achieve the Olympic dream. And during that period of time, started coaching as well and studying exercise science. So kind of built my entire world around improvement in endurance performance. So I've been running now for, I guess, over 35 years and was lucky enough to be national champion when I turned 40. Continue to train and race and, just love the sport. I think it's such a wonderful opportunity for people to learn a lot about themselves, as well as improve their health and fitness.
Wow. 40. What distance were you running at age 40?
The trail marathon. They had a national championship for the trail marathon, and I won that for that master's division, I guess you call it.
Wow. Congratulations. So you have run at a high level, and talk about your coaching, the people who coached you.
Well, like I said, the real first coach was my high school coach, and he essentially set my path for my life. I didn't realize it at the time, but he became so important in my life because he had this really, and I think a lot of high school coaches are this way in that they just develop in you this ability to work hard, work as a team, self-improvement, making all the right life choices that help you improve as a runner, which help you improve as a student, which help you improve as a human. All of those things he set in stone. And he was kind of an old school coach. He just learned from the previous generation. So from the coaches in the 1950s and 60s, kind of where he got his training methodology. And I wouldn't say that the methodology now, looking back at it, was, you know, complex or anything like that, but it was proven. Mm-hmm. And then the most important component was he made us believe in ourselves. So he really blended the sort of mental part of coaching with the X's and O's of what workouts you should do when. And I think that was his greatest skill. And that's what really, you know, I fell in love with the sport, because he really was motivating me to challenge myself. And every runner knows that work hard toward a goal and then achieve it, something that maybe you didn't think you could do 2 or 3 or 4 months before. That is really rewarding. So I learned a lot from that. And then in college, I had several coaches across my college career, and each of them was slightly different as well. So maybe that helped me as I became a coach to realize, you know, this sort of outlook or this methodology works for these types of athletes and maybe not for this other type of athlete. So that whole collection really helped me. And then maybe most importantly, aside from my high school coach, I got to be mentored by some of the world's greatest coaches. I toured with Arthur Lydiard, who was, you know, really influential in all of training of running. Joe Vigil, who was Diener Castor's coach. He helped me a lot, particularly when I was coaching the pro athletes. And just all these coaches from around the world, I've had an opportunity to kind of be mentored by. And that's really helped me grow as a coach.
Wow, that's impressive. And I love the part about the high school coach who made you believe in yourself.
Yeah.
Such an important part of being a good coach.
Definitely. That was, I would say, if I look back at it, that's what he did the best for all of us that ran for him, was creating that belief in ourselves.
So important. Now, how much did you know or use nutrition as a tool for your running performance?
Well, once I really got into running in high school and it kind of became my focus, and I think like a lot of runners, as soon as you kind of become a runner and you fall in love with it and you want to improve, you start to make better decisions on many things in your life, right? You start to go to bed earlier. You start to think about doing your prehab stuff, your mobility, your core. And nutrition is an obvious component. So for me, I really cleaned up my diet. It wasn't bad in high school, but I just started to think, what's going to give me a better chance of success in running? And so it was really just a healthier diet, making smarter choices more frequently. And that, of course, you know, leads to better training, which leads to better racing.
Right. Now, did you have help with that? I mean, were people advising you, or was this stuff that you were reading about and kind of doing it on your own?
I was doing it on my own, because I really, once I fell in love with the sport, I started reading everything.
Yeah.
Everything that had ever been written about running, nutrition, any exercise science, all of that, I began to really explore. And so it was a lot of self-learning during the high school period. And then, of course, with my undergraduate and graduate degrees in exercise science, I got more in depth with it. But I was really a student of the sport, and I was reading everything current. But then I would go to used bookstores and buy all the old running books and read those as well. So really kind of doing a forward and a backward look at training methodology was really exciting for me.
Yeah. I remember in my first marathon, which was many years ago, we had defizzed Coke as the, you know, as the Gatorade drink before Gatorade actually came out for runners anyway. And, you know, and now it's like, it's kind of the same type of thing that's being offered for a lot of runners with, you know, caffeine and sugar and all of the things that were in Coke, but, are now just more expensive to buy, but packaged with a different brand name.
Right. Well, like we see, you know, coaches and athletes figure out what works. And so I remember even with the great Arthur Lydiard, he was telling his athletes, hey, put an extra spoonful of honey in your morning tea before your long run. So they were already recognizing, hey, there's some things that can help you improve your performance. Let's do those.
Yeah, right. Well, let's move a little forward in your business and in your coaching, because you were one of the first to really embrace online coaching. And tell us a little bit about the history of online coaching and what has changed since you got involved in it.
Well, I am getting older for sure, because when I first started doing remote coaching, it was by fax, sending training plans via fax, getting reports via fax. Yep. So for me, moving to online was kind of a natural extension of, oh, now we have this technology that can help me communicate in a better way with athletes. And so I'd done a lot of work with athletes in that mechanism. And so starting the online company was really pretty a natural sort of way for me to help with athletes. And then it became more and more popular as I got more well-known as a coach. And so it's sort of grown from that, from just really needing to do it as a tool to help me better help more runners, to then growing into a full-time job.
Now, when did you actually start doing online per se, rather than emailing or coaching? I'm sure you still use emails, but the faxing part, I'm sure, is not happening anymore.
No, I don't own a fax machine anymore. Thank goodness. No, that was in the late 90s. Okay. I would say probably 98 or 99 when email really became more functional, I think. Yeah. A lot of the email software platforms began to get a little less clunky and a little bit easier. And more people had email as well. I think when AOL came out and Yahoo, some of those, then more people had email addresses. And that kind of led to online coaching being more reasonable for people to do.
Right. Okay. So late 90s, you were doing online stuff.
Yeah. Yep. I had iterations of mcmillanrunning.com in the mid to late 90s, and then a little bit more clarified in the early 2000s. And the McMillan Running Calculator, which is sort of the most popular tool on it, was launched on the web around 2000. So yeah, I've been doing it a while, but it's been great because it allows me the flexibility to work with people anywhere in the world. And that's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, I love it. And it's affordable now online. There was a time when it was too difficult to access, but now it's affordable and wow, it's just so.
And accessible. I think, accessibility has really improved. I mean, even now we have it on our phones, right?
Right.
So you don't have to sit at a desktop computer. Then it was laptop computers. Then it was phones and tablets. And so really, no matter which mechanism an athlete wants to engage with training and coaching, it's available now.
Yeah, it's terrific. Now, we are continuing our education on Superstarts and the UCAN story. And I believe UCAN is a sponsor of your program. So for full disclosure, I'm guessing that you wouldn't have accepted their advertising if you didn't believe in their product.
No, that's been a fortunate partnership. It didn't start as a partnership. I contacted them to get Generation UCAN to help my own running.
Okay.
Because I was running into the same situation I think a lot of runners run into, which is with fast-acting carbohydrates like gels and sports drinks. I was really having trouble later in the marathon with, my stomach being upset and not being able to get in as much fuel and kind of fading late in the race and looking for an answer to solve that problem. So I reached out to them early on to try it and then just got more and more involved with them over the years.
So how did you use it initially? What was, what even prompted you to contact them?
Well, like I said, I'd run a few marathons and I was really struggling toward the end to be able to fuel because I think like a lot of runners, I'm really susceptible to the spike in the crash when you have fast acting carbohydrates, which is what's in sports drinks and gels, that they're meant to deliver that sugar very quickly into your bloodstream.
Right.
But you've got to time it to where you don't miss another dose. Otherwise, you can have a sugar crash, if you will, low blood glucose. So I felt like my body was very susceptible to that. And when I was using sports drinks and then gels, my stomach would get upset.
Totally.
I would have these kind of down periods during the run where I wasn't feeling very good. And so I was looking for something that could maybe be less complicated, maybe more stable blood glucose, and avoid some of those issues that I was having. And I think a lot of runners run into that. They have GI distress or whatever. So for me, like a lot of things I've done in my coaching, is it started with me.
Yeah.
Where totally. I was trying to figure out a solution for my problem.
Right.
And Generation UCAN, I understood the science because of my background. So I said, this makes sense to me. Yeah. Let me try it
right.
and see if it actually works.
Right. And so you tried it and what did it
and
do?
And I had
you?
Much better success uh-huh. because I, you know, the fueling with UCAN is so different than a fast acting carbohydrate like a sports drink or a gel, because you feed less frequently. So you don't have sort of the spike and the crash.
Mm-hmm.
You have a less complicated marathon nutrition plan. So that makes it easier.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have more steady energy as opposed to these periods where you feel really great, you know, right after you take a sports drink or a gel, and then kind of lower periods as your blood glucose adjusts. And then of course you have to dose again. So for me, it was a little more steady energy across long distance races, and that served me better.
Now, we've had two other interviews on Superstarch and different voices talking about it, but it does seem like different people respond differently to it in terms of maximum benefit. So, how did you kind of formulate how you used it for yourself, and then how do you recommend it for your clients, or how do you use it with your clients?
Well, I started kind of mimicking what I would have done with fast acting carbohydrates.
Uh-huh.
So I would fuel by sipping. So maybe, you know, 4 ounces or so of Generation UCAN every 20 minutes
uh-huh.
across a marathon.
Uh-huh.
So kind of using a traditional method of fueling frequently.
Right.
But then I learned that I could actually spread that out
yeah.
and fuel less frequently. And I think for a lot of runners, taking a dose of Generation UCAN every hour across your marathon works really well.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes the fueling strategy much easier, because you're feeding with Generation UCAN every hour, and then you're just supplementing that with water at the aid stations in between.
Mm-hmm.
So your fueling strategy gets really simplified for the marathon. So now with athletes, and particularly if they're just starting with Generation UCAN, just like with all nutrition products, you have to experiment
right.
to see what works. But I say, hey, take a dose maybe 30 to 45 minutes before a long run,
mm-hmm.
and then fuel every hour, mm-hmm. take another dose, another mm-hmm. packet, if you will, or
yeah.
scoop
yeah.
with their serving size.
Right.
Take that and see how you feel.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you feel like you need more energy, then you can take more of it or more frequently, or you can back off. You mm-hmm. can kind of tailor the program as to what will work best for you. So what I've found now is that strategy of using a slow acting carbohydrate like Generation UCAN early in the race, and then going to fast acting carbohydrates late in the race, maybe the last 30 or 45 minutes, where you do want that like mental boost as you're kind of in the heaviest fatigue period, that is a great strategy. It minimizes sort of the spike and the crash. It keeps your gut happy
mm-hmm.
because the gut can only tolerate sort of getting dosed with fast acting carbohydrates for so long, particularly when it's getting dehydrated across a race.
Yeah.
And then they're able to have a lot more energy for that last, say, hour of the race. And that's where we know a lot of people lose a lot of time. So if you have a lot more power and excitement over that last hour, you can run really well in the marathon.
And your stomach can handle the fast acting carbohydrates because you haven't been dosing it with that all along. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah, there's sort of a fatigue that seems to happen
mm-hmm.
with the gut's willingness to, and runners know this.
Yeah.
I mean, runners will be like, oh, that gel tasted so great at mile 5,
yeah.
but then it made me want to vomit at
yeah.
mile 20. And that's just the gut is just fatigued.
Right.
And it's saying, I can't take this anymore. That's too much. I need it more dilute. It's really complaining.
Mm-hmm.
And athletes are having to go to the bathroom
mm-hmm.
or they're having upset stomachs or And mainly what happens, of course, is they fuel less just when they need to be fueling because their stomach's upset.
Right.
So all of those things contribute to hitting the wall or bonking or really fading at the end. So what we're trying to do is give you the steady energy you need early in the race, mm-hmm. so that, because you do need to fuel, obviously, but we're not really hammering your GI system so much that later in the race, when you need more fuel, it's unhappy. So we're keeping the brain, the gut happy. We keep the brain happy because it likes stable blood glucose, and we're simplifying the race nutrition strategy. Those are three things I really think are helping athletes.
Yeah, that sounds really good. Now, you mentioned racing, and of course, that's what we're, most of us, if we're competitive at all, then we want to do the best in a race. But clearly, this can benefit us in training and should be tested in training, right?
Absolutely. Like everything, you've got to start well before your race and dial it in, because we're all so unique in what flavors we like, mm-hmm. what, you know, consistency we like, because you can mix generation. You can really thick, almost like a paste, like a gel, or you can make it really thin, like more like a sports drink. Mm-hmm. So you figure out what kind of works for you, which rhythm works for you. It's no different than trying out what gear are you going to wear for the race? What shoes are you going to wear? All of that you need to practice to dial it in. But, you know, we do several long runs. A lot of people do tune-up races. And so those give you great opportunities to experiment.
Yeah. Now, another thing that Krista Austin talked about was the osmolarity of superstarch, and that it actually mm-hmm. is absorbed easier than a lot of the goo-type drinks or goo-type carbohydrates that we're taking in, because the cells are, I guess they're smaller or something like that.
Yeah, definitely. It has a lot of benefits for the gut. Mm-hmm. And that's why people who have GI distress during races and long runs and things like that really benefit from something like Generation UCAN, because it is so much easier on the GI system. And everybody knows, if you've been running when you've got a GI problem, that's not the best situation for a great performance. So removing that can definitely set you up for success.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think it's a really exciting product. It's a really exciting idea. And definitely people should, they should test it out. You know, it's the kind of thing that's fairly new. You and I were talking about this before the interview today, that I think a lot of people don't understand the way that a superstarch might work. So by listening to these different interviews and then by also trying it out, this might be a really great tool in your runner's toolbox.
Well, for sure, if you're really having problems in longer races like the marathon, and you're having GI problems, or you're not feeling really strong at the end of the race, you're fading, you're losing a lot of time at the end, you're bonking, any of those situations, you need to try something different, because what you're doing is not working. And so I think it's worth exploring, just like I did. Let's explore this idea of steady energy instead of fast-acting carbohydrates, and dosing less frequently so your gut stays happy, yet you still have energy. All of that is really a great strategy to use. And a lot of athletes use Generation UCAN before their workouts. Mm-hmm. So if you have a track workout on Tuesday night with your group, and you know you don't want to eat a big lunch because you don't want something on your stomach, then Generation UCAN provides steady energy with, you know, low calories, and you don't have a lot on your stomach. People use it as a meal replacement. They use it as post-workout and long run way to sort of replenish their carbohydrate stores. So it's really a very dynamic product from the uses it can have. Most people, you know, their first pain point is, I'm fading in the marathon, or I have GI distress. I want to feel better. And that's where they start with Generation UCAN.
Yeah. Now, in our first interview, we actually got to talk to Meg Flesge a bit. And yeah. So it's such an amazing man. I just have such high respect for him. But he uses it like you're talking about. He mainly uses it either before or after a workout for replacement. So anyway, lots of ways to use it, lots of ways for people to think about how to use this new new energy source, I think, of superstarts. So moving on to another part of McMillan running, what other kind of concepts are out there over the history of your own running and McMillan running that, new things that you might want to share with us that will help us become better runners?
Well, I think what we've kind of learned over time is that it's not that hard to know the training you should do to accomplish your goals. Mm-hmm. We're all really unique. So you got to tease out your differences in your runner type and your particular unique traits. And that's kind of what McMillan Running does a lot, is tease that out. But then you got to be able to do the training, and it's about staying healthy. And I think we've put a lot more emphasis on staying healthy, having really intelligent training plans that are adaptable, particularly to people's busy lives, and then doing smart prehab or sort of core strength mobility training within that meshes with your run training so that you stay healthy and can do better training. And then really focusing on, having really high quality training and high quality workouts when you need to have them so that you reach your race at a peak condition. And if you do all those things right, then you see these big breakthroughs that we're seeing with athletes, young, middle-aged, and older, because the training is really in sync with their body, their mind, and their life schedule. So I think a lot of us are in coaching or kind of dialing in, how do we individualize these general training principles to keep people healthy and then allow them to go to the next level? Because we have seen, the normal injury rate in running is something crazy, like 60% of runners, 70% of runners get injured. We've seen with our training, it's less than 10%. We're at 8% of athletes. So it's 80% reduction.
Wow.
I think a lot of that is because the training is flexible. We empower the athlete to make changes based on how they feel each day. The training paces are optimized using the McMillan Running Calculator, and their prehab programs are included. So their core strength and mobility tell them exactly what to do. That way you've got an athlete that, just stacks successful week on top of successful week, instead of having the usual pattern, which was get fit, get injured, recover, get fit, get injured, recover.
True. You
try to break that cycle.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about sleep? Talk about sleep for runners. Resting is so important, right?
It's so funny. I did a poll. Every Monday, I send out a video update to all of the athletes using the McMillan system. And I include a poll. And I included a poll and I said, well, if there was one thing you could change this week to improve your running, what would it be? And more sleep was the number one answer.
Wow.
So I think, our kind of lives are now set up to be under-recovered. And so focusing more on rest and sleep, and, of course, that spurred me to go into a whole thing about how you can improve the quality of your sleep and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So I think it is very important, particularly for busy people.
That is the time for recovery. So the choice between, being exhausted and getting up for that 5 a.m. run versus sleeping in. Can you comment at all about that phenomenon?
Well, you have to look at your schedule, right? Mm-hmm. And you're always sort of looking at the stress-rest cycle, because you want to think about, am I going to get recovery? When am I going to get recovery? So with some of the pro athletes, the Olympic level athletes, we might do training where they don't sleep in because they need to get that run in, but we know a day or two later, they're going to be caught up, if you will, on their recovery.
Right.
And so I think it's a balance of looking ahead. There are times when getting up early and just getting it in are important. And then there's other times where it's like, wow, that's just digging you farther into a hole of under recovery,
right?
Because you're not going to have more opportunities in the future.
Yeah.
So a lot of it, and this is, I think, one of the challenges for runners, particularly new runners, is understanding that it's not an equation.
Mm-hmm.
Training is not an equation. Mm-hmm. It is really a dance. And it is really about, how do you feel today? And how does that inform how you might actually do the run that's scheduled, and how that might inform the next day's run and the next day's run?
Mm-hmm.
And after I teach athletes kind of how to get that, and they feel empowered that the training plan's not set in stone, that it actually gets modified frequently,
yeah,
then they start to have better workouts. The injuries never progress. They don't get injured because they are able to modify whenever there's an ache or pain that kind of comes up that is maybe could move to an injury. And then they all of a sudden see the quality of their training go up. They stack more weeks together. And we know that fitness builds over time in running. And so that really sets them up for success. So that whole resting or recovery process is key. That's why Meb talks about recovery being so important. Uh-huh. He knows if I can recover faster and more completely in between my runs, I'll be able to train better more frequently. Mm-hmm. And that's what the pros do. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's obviously they're not balancing as much, you know, time commitment as the rest of us, but it really is, how can I recover?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Mental brain power, that part of what's going on with running is so fascinating. What can you tell us about that?
Well, like a lot of things, I feel like, you know, we learned from coaches and athletes, the mental traits that can be helpful, right? That's mm-hmm. why there's all these really fantastic coaches from our past and athletes from our past. And then exercise science comes in and explains how that happens. Mm-hmm. And now we have all this body of work that's very exciting in neuroscience, connecting how you think, how you feel, the subconscious and conscious parts of your brain, and how that can control performance, motivation, all of those things coming together to give us more insight into how do you build a brain that is set up for success. And I feel like, you know, that was really an evolution that I made as a coach, certainly kind of being numbers driven, obviously mm-hmm. creating a McMillan running calculator. I like the numbers, exercise mm-hmm. science. I like the data, but learning that it is about how you can motivate the athlete to do the training they need to do, to be in the right mindset when they have good days and bad days, and then begin to believe that they can do something that at the moment they're not quite sure they can. Mm-hmm. Certainly a great example is sort of the Olympic level and national champion runners that I've coached. A lot of times they weren't the best runners coming out of college. So it was hard when I was saying, hey, if we do this right, you can be a national champion. You can go to the world championships. You can be an Olympian. And to sort of work through that process mentally with them to help them begin to believe they can do something that at the moment sounds a little bit scary. So I think a lot of the neuroscience and mental stuff is really backing up what coaches and athletes from the past and sports psychologists have known for a long time. Get that brain right and you can really go out and do great things.
And have you read the book by Alex Hutchinson, the book Endure?
Yeah.
Yeah. Fascinating. So mm-hmm. even understanding how to run through a level of pain, mental pain more than physical pain, obviously. I mean, you really have to be able to figure out which is which, but overcoming certain levels of pain or understanding certain levels of pain and then being able to say, no, this is my brain telling me one thing, but it doesn't mean that I actually have to slow down. It's just that I have to know my own levels, my own abilities, and you know, be able to kind of interpret the message that my brain is sending me, which is not I'm going to die, but it's that, you're pushing it.
Yeah, I think, well, I always say suffering instead of pain, so it kind of differentiates. I think
okay,
that's a good way to.
Yeah, that's good.
Think about it.
Yeah.
But ultimately, you could say that all of training is just to help you suffer more in the right way for your given race, right? So if you're training for a mile or a 5K,
right,
you've got to suffer in a different way than if you're training for a half marathon or a marathon.
Right.
And ultimately, the training is just provide small doses of exposure to that type of suffering so that your brain gets more comfortable with it and you're able to keep going even when those signals of fatigue or suffering are happening. And that's what, you know, over time allows athletes to perform better in workouts, is not just that your VO2 max is improved or your running economy or lactate threshold, but it's that you're willing to keep pushing even when there's a lot of suffering going on. And the better you can get, number one, accept it because it's just part of the deal if you're going to try to be your best, mm-hmm. but also work with it and understand that those bad runs where you really suffer are really actually helping you maybe adjust that threshold point in the end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I love the word suffer. Thank you. I'm going to be using that instead of pain. It makes a lot of sense in a lot of ways.
Yeah, really, particularly with new runners, yep. I find, you know, because they push through the pain and it's like, well, but wait a minute, that was your calf seizing up because you have an injury versus... Right. You know, what we're talking about. And so I talk a lot about suffering with athletes so that they get comfortable that that's part of the deal, mm-hmm. that it's not every workout is about feeling great.
Right.
It is about, okay, putting yourself in a certain amount of mental suffering. And I do this all the time with athletes during workouts is, you know, hey, we did the first 5 repetitions, so you were appropriately fatigued so that you can challenge yourself in these next 3 or something
right.
like that, so that they start to see, oh yeah, this is about bringing my A game when I am suffering. Mm-hmm. And that is good exposure for when they go to the race and they encounter it, then the brain doesn't freak out. You know,
right.
like all this neuroscience is showing us, if the brain freaks out, it does not like that. And so it will send lots of messaging about slowing down. But if it is more comfortable in those situations, it will allow you to kind of keep going and it won't sort of shut the power, if you will, to the body.
Yeah. Well, good points and good definition, explanation of that situation. We are going to be changing gears here and moving into the final kick. I know you know about the final kick. Is there anything else you want to share with us before we change gears?
You know, I'm just excited that everybody has this opportunity to go out and be their best, and wish everybody the best in their journey toward it.
As I mentioned at the start of the show, today's episode is brought to you courtesy of UKEN, the superstarch energy bars and powders that provide long-lasting fuel before and during runs and races with no sugar spikes and no crashes. This podcast loves companies and products backed by science and research, and as a runner, racer, and coach, UKEN has been on my list of preferred products for many years. Independent, peer-reviewed studies have shown that UKEN's patented superstarch formula delivers a steady release of carbohydrates over several hours, giving you long-lasting energy without the spike and crash in blood glucose. By avoiding the sugar spikes, superstarch helps put athletes in the metabolic state to burn more fat and be less reliant on frequent feedings of sugar-based fuels during your run. All this data means UKEN can help you avoid hitting the dreaded wall during your half, full, or ultramarathon distance. UKEN is also gentle on the stomach and used by Olympians Meb Keflezighi and Dathan Ritzenheim, pro runner Sarah Sellers, and more than 40 2020 Olympic marathon trials qualifiers. And because we know you love your science-backed products, we've got a special deal for you to try UKEN yourself. Head to runnersconnect.net/UKEN, that's UCAN, and use the code RTTT, and you'll get 20% off your first order. We are back with Run to the Top podcast with Coach Greg McMillan of McMillan Running. Greg, are you ready to head into the final kick?
You bet.
All right. Part one, a favorite local run or outdoor location for working out in your neighborhood. And you are in Mill Valley, is that right?
That's right. Okay. In Marin County, okay. North of San Francisco. Well, I'm lucky because the Marin Headlands are here and there's a great trail called the Diaz Ridge Trail. And it starts at the very top of the ridge off Panoramic Highway, and you run to Muir Beach and back. Mm-hmm. So you get these wonderful sweeping views of the Pacific Ocean, and then you dive down actually to the ocean and then return. That's one of my favorite runs for sure.
Wow. And where do you usually park for something like that?
At the trailhead on Panoramic Highway, there's a pullout there where you can stop, and they've got a really nice sort of welcome sign, a trailhead sign there with a map showing the out and back for that run.
Great. I think I've done that run before. It's really beautiful. The only problem for somebody like me in the East Bay is driving over there and all the traffic. But it's definitely worth it. Okay, second part here. Recommended book, research, or video on running?
Well, obviously, I have my own book, You Only Faster. So I think that's a good one for people to check out. Okay. I'm also a friend and really like the work of Matt Fitzgerald. Mm-hmm. He has a lot of different books on different topics, from nutrition to brain training to just regular training. So I think he's a really good person to check out as well.
Cool. Okay. And let's see, my third question, a person you know who you would recommend that our listeners might enjoy hearing on this show.
Well, I think Steve Magnus and, you know, that group of guys you mentioned, Alex, that group is really, they're doing a lot of sort of connection with the science of it and bringing that back to the real runner. So I think those guys, Steve Magnus and his group are good people too.
Okay, so now we are pretty much out of time. We are at the point where please give us any contact information so our listeners can stay in touch with you and learn more about McMillan Running.
Just head to mcmillanrunning.com. That's M-C-M-I-L-L-A-N running.com. And you can find everything there that we offer and get in touch with me if you have questions.
And Greg, they can contact you from mcmillanrunning.com as well, right? You directly.
If yes, there's a contact link there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, sounds good. All right. Well, you have been listening to Greg McMillan of McMillan Running. Thanks so much for taking time to speak with us today, Greg.
You bet. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I definitely learned a lot. Suffer. And thank you, our audience, for joining us for today's podcast at Run to the Top. You are invited to follow us at the Runners Connect Winners Circle on Facebook by going to runnersconnect.net/FB. Take a moment to subscribe to Run to the Top podcast at runnersconnect.net or on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, etc., so that you can be notified every Wednesday when the new episode is published. And thank you, each of you, for listening. We'll be back next week with another super interview to entertain, educate, and inspire you as you head out on your running workout. This is Stephanie K. Atwood, your host with Run to the Top, wishing you great runs this week. See you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Run to the Top podcast from runnersconnect.net.